and compounded it by misinterpreting and not following the limitations made of Desitel and Ingram. A prior disposition of a related claim only informs the claimant of the disposition of the other claim if the second claim is denied or discussed. The required discussion of Ingram as to Desitel's limitation is what is missing in the Adams case, as the Veterans Court applied Desitel to it as if Ingram did not exist.
Yes, we understand the background, and it would be helpful to get directly to your best argument.
All right.
Well, let me ask you, in that regard, you're saying that the court misinterpreted, or the Veterans Court misinterpreted or misunderstood the Desitel decision. Certainly, that's a question within the scope of our jurisdiction. Desitel sets forth the rule of law, and you're saying that the Veterans Court misinterpreted that. And that's certainly something that we can fairly adjudicate one way or the other. We can agree with the Veterans Court or agree with your argument. But is that all we can do in this case? In other words, say for the moment that we agreed with you that the Veterans Court did misinterpret the Desitel decision. Would that be the end of our role? Would we then have to send it back to the Veterans Court to re-adjudicate the case in light of what we say is the correct interpretation of Desitel, or would our job be to go ahead and decide the merits of the case?
You understand what I'm saying? Yes, yes, Your Honor. You would have to, in my opinion, have to remand it back to the Veterans Court for their determination. Yes, sir.
Do proceed with this point of law that we're focusing on, the interpretation of Desitel.
All right. In Desitel, the claim was denied because there was no appeal from the regional office decision. It was an earlier effective date, and it was denied because Mr. Desitel had not appealed the 1985 decision, which denied his claim, or indicated that he did not have a psychiatric disability. They had allowed a claim for a head injury, but in that decision had determined that there was no psychiatric disability. Subsequently, there was a psychiatric disability, and Mr. Desitel asked for an earlier effective date. However, he did not appeal that case, whereas in Mr. Adams did appeal his case. The second criteria, I believe, is where the claims were not filed at the same time. Mr. Adams filed his claim 6 months later, whereas Mr. Desitel filed his claims at the same time. And in the Desitel decision, they made that a criterion where they cases were filed at the same time. And therefore, I believe there is that distinction in the Veterans Court was misinterpreted the holding or the rationale in Desitel to the detriment of Mr. Adams.
Okay. Proceed. Yeah.
All right.
Anything else you need to tell us?
Ingram, the Ingram court made decided limitations on the Desitel holding, and the Veterans Court, while acknowledging that there were the Ingram decision, did not discuss that at all. Specifically, Ingram rejected the, as they determined it, a broad sweeping interpretation of Desitel as to supplanting the pending claim doctrine. Mr. Adams had filed a claim originally for rheumatic heart disease. 6 months later, he had filed a claim when he found out he had endocarditis, and the veterans and the regional office and the VA only adjudicated the claim for an inactive rheumatic valvitis.
Well, why isn't it the case that here that the board, and I'm looking at A76, the scope of the board's decision would include not only the rheumatic valvular condition, but also the related heart condition, in this case, endocarditis. The board says in the paragraph discussion decision that medical records do not disclose active rheumatic fever or other active cardiac pathology during service. The scope of that description seems to me to encompass a heart condition more generally than the specific diagnosis number one of rheumatic valvular disease.
There's a difference in the type of heart diseases.
Yeah, but they're related, right? In other words, endocarditis is often associated, as I understand the medical condition, with rheumatic fever. It is a valvular condition in the when even his description in his appeal was to a heart condition, which presumably would encompass not only the specific diagnosis for rheumatic valvular condition, but any other related condition, don't you think?
Well, in this case, sir, the VA themselves differentiates between rheumatic heart disease and endocarditis. There is the diagnostic codes 7000 and 7001, where they differentiate between, and they're separate separate diseases.
Right.
Now, also, I would like to point out that in the May 1991 hearing at the board, the board determined that they were going to send the case back to the regional office for an initial consideration of endocarditis. I believe that is a JA 93 in the joint appendix.
Right, but the board characterized these two diagnoses as essentially, and I think this is their language, two theories for one claim. But why isn't that a fair characterization of what's going on here? That he has, nobody was quite sure, presumably, at that point. There was a diagnosis at one point of endocarditis secondary to the rheumatic heart condition. So there was clearly a perception that there was something related going on here. And the ultimate decision was heart condition claim denied. Why didn't that encompass any theory of endocarditis as well as a theory of a rheumatic heart condition?
The reason is, Judge Hall, is that the VA consistently in their adjudication of this case characterized it as rheumatic inactive valvular disease. They made no reference. They never made a reference to endocarditis until the May 1991 board decision. The initial claim was for rheumatic heart disease. When Mr. Adams filed the claim for endocarditis, it was in association with, he made that as almost as a second claim in October. And he never received a decision relative to endocarditis which the VA acknowledges are separate and distinct diseases. As a matter of fact, I think that would be covered in EFRM, where a second claim, even though related, is a distinct claim for a second disability.
Let's hear from the government, and we'll proceed with your rebuttal as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carter. Now, Judge Bryson, may I have Judge Shaw's name, please?
we'll switch here. I was beginning to feel distinguished. Now I'm back to myself. No, that's pretty okay.
Sometimes the cases are difficult, but we don't need to make it any more difficult for the lawyers.
Ms. Cohen.
May it please the court, this court lacks jurisdiction to consider the Veterans Court's application of the Schodel or Ingram to the facts of Mr. Adams' case. To the extent that Mr. Adams makes an argument that the Veterans Court misinterpreted those two cases, the Veterans Court properly interpreted them, specifically the rule that you look to the reasonableness of whether the veteran should have known that both of his claims were denied.
Do you think we have jurisdiction to do anything in this case?
Well, it's a little bit unclear from Mr. Adams' brief, but I believe he does raise two legal arguments, one concerning whether the rule set forth in DeShodel applies in the case where the RO decision had been timely appealed to the board, the other being whether it applies to claims that were not filed at the exact same time.
Okay, so, and do we, in the government's view, have jurisdiction to decide those two questions?
Yes. As to the first question, whether an appeal from the RO decision makes the rule inapplicable, the appeal does not affect the rule at all. It doesn't affect the scope of the original RO decision. It does affect the finality in the sense that it's been appealed, but once the board makes a decision on the RO decision, then that is just as final as an initial RO decision that had not been appealed. In fact, in the facts of this case, the fact that there was a board decision makes the rule even more applicable in that the board specifically said, based on the five RO decisions that were made, that there was no evidence of service connection for a heart condition encompassing both the endocarditis and the rheumatic valvulitis claim. In terms of whether the two can be filed simultaneously or need to be filed simultaneously, first, as a factual matter, the board found that there was only one claim here. That was the first claim initially filed in April of 1951, and that the subsequent affidavit and the medical report that were considered in August and September of 1951 were not separate claims, but were just additional evidence for the same claim. So based upon the board's factual findings, the issue as to whether claims need to be filed simultaneously has not even been raised in this case.
Could I take you back to a statement that to make sure I heard you correctly? Did you say that the board had characterized the denial in terms of a heart condition?
Yes, the board specifically said that the denial was for rheumatic valvulitis, but in the board's decision, the board said that their medical records do not show rheumatic valvulitis or other cardiac pathology, that section that you read earlier.
Right, but I was looking for language which I thought you were quoting, but I guess it was just a characterization. At several points along the line, there were references to heart condition. I think in his appeal, as a matter of fact, back in 51, there was a reference to heart condition. But the board itself didn't use that terminology. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. All right.
The terminology was used in at least one of the RO decisions in September of 1951 and was also used in Mr. Adams' appeal in 1951 to the board, as well as the board certification of the appeal. I'll use the term heart condition or heart disability. The board did specifically say rheumatic valvulitis, but also found that there was no evidence of any other heart condition. not using the word heart condition, but other cardiac pathology is exactly what the board...
One of the things that I find a little confusing about this case is the extent to which we're talking about two theories or two claims. Now, I understand that the board in its most recent decision accepted by the Veterans Court characterized the endocarditis claim as a separate claim, an informal claim, but presumably a separate claim. And yet the board has earlier previously characterized this as at least analogous to two theories underlying a single claim. Can you reconcile those two characterizations, or is there no inconsistency between them in your view?
There's no inconsistency in terms of applying the rule in this case. Assuming that it's one decision or two theories but one claim, then the rule would be applied just as it was applied in the DeShoto case. There would be no question as to whether it applied to two separately filed claims. However, if they were separately filed claims, in this case they were part of the same claims process. One was filed in April of 1951. The other, assuming it's the affidavit, would have been filed only 6 months later.
Right, but not at least strictly contemporaneously. I mean, they would have been filed at different times, not at the same time, at least as of the same, on the same day, for example. And do you think that makes a difference in light of Desotel?
No, because they were part of the same claims process in that he had filed his first claim. There was a denial, a reconsideration. He was continuously submitting more evidence related to his heart condition claim.
But I'm not sure, but filed during the same claims process is really the position that would be consistent with the normal rule that's applied here. For example, if he had come in April and said, I have a skull fracture, and he'd come in October and said, in addition, I suffered a knee injury. You wouldn't be arguing that the denial of the skull fracture claim would also cover the knee injury, even though there was nothing said about the knee injury, right?
No, we wouldn't be arguing that.
So it has to do with the relationship between the claims, at least as much as it has to do with the contemporaneity of the two, right?
Right. In this case, and that's where the Ingram rule comes in, because in that case, there was a claim for service connection for a disability, and there was a second entirely unrelated claim for non-service connected pension.
Well, that's where I get back into wondering about what to do about the finding of the board in the most recent board decision that they were separate claims. Because if they're separate claims, then that begins to make it sound more like a skull and a knee set of claims as opposed to two claims for a center, two assertions regarding the same malady.
Well, they can be entirely separate claims, as in your example with the skull and knee, or they can be separate, technically separate claims, but on a related issue. Here, in fact, the medical report said that the endocarditis was secondary to the rheumatic valvulitis, showing that they were closely related claims. The rule in DeShoto and in Ingram is that it has to be reasonable that the veteran would think that one claim was implicitly denied when the other claim was denied. So the relatedness of the claims comes in under the reasonableness standard. If the claims, as in this case, are so closely related, they're both very similar heart diseases, then it would be reasonable when the board says something about a heart condition or talks about no any active symptoms of a heart pathology, that the board would be talking about both the rheumatic valvulitis claim and the endocarditis claim, as opposed to your example, where if the board is involved in a discussion about a skull injury and says nothing about a knee injury, it would not be reasonable for the claimant to think that the knee injury was also covered.
It would seem, though, that it could lead to some somewhat murky situations. I mean, for example, just to take my skull and knee, suppose there had been a single incident in service that he'd been hit by a truck, and he says, you know, I fractured my skull, and then as I fell after the skull fracture, I twisted my knee. and the knee is never referred to after that. It's pretty clear that that's a much less severe condition, but nonetheless is a separate medical condition. Would you think in, under those circumstances that you could say, well, you know, it's covered by the denial with respect to the skull?
That would certainly be a closer call, and that's something that the rule requires the RO to look at in the first instance as to whether the language in the RO's decision or the board decision, if there is one, whether that could be reasonably read to cover both conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible, depending on how the board looked at the issue, that that would only cover one, or that it would be reasonable for the claimant to believe that it covered both issues. For these reasons, we respectfully request that you affirm the Veterans Court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cohn-Haviser. Mr. Potter, have you rebuttal?
Judge Bryson, the question of the closeness of the disabilities or the conditions, I submit, was covered in Ephraim when they in the Ephraim decision, where they said, and this was a these were mental disorders, not disorders, but the claim based on the diagnosis of a new mental taken alone in combination of prior disorder states a new claim for the jurisdictional requirement when the new disorder had not been diagnosed or considered at the time of the prior notice of disagreement. Mr. Adams really did not know he had endocarditis until he filed his claim in October. And at the time of his appeal to the administrator, he didn't ask for heart conditions. He asked for one heart condition. The only one that was denied was that of rheumatic valvitis, and that was never the issue of endocarditis. He never got a decision on that until 1991. It was denied and subsequently allowed in 1997. At which time an effective date was given, and we requested an earlier effective date. As to the reasonableness of this, you're talking about a man with limited education. He has two disabilities. He's received one denial. He's put a second claim in. He expects another. He expects a decision. He didn't get one.
When you say he didn't get one, I mean, the on A68, there is a...
pardon me, sir, what was that?
Appendix 68, the letter that was sent to him after he filed his second claim, his affidavit, says, yeah, we've taken your affidavit into account, and we still deny service connection.
But they also said we reconsidered. They did not say they considered the endocarditis. They said we have reconsidered, and the consideration that had been given of the original decision was for inactive rheumatic valvitis.
Well, they say we've reconsidered your claim for disability compensation.
Yes,
he made a claim, and in his affidavit, he says, well, there are two grounds here. There's the rheumatic valvulitis, and there's also the endocarditis. And they say, having previously told you that you don't have a claim for disability compensation, we now reconsider and say you still don't have a claim. So I think to read too much into the reconsider would be a little strange.
But once again, sir, he never received a decision as to the endocarditis, and in the claim, when you file the appeal to the administrator, it's in the instructions on the back of that, and that's on JA-70, I believe, about the 13th down, it's for the agency of original jurisdiction initial claim. The initial claim was for rheumatic heart disease, or as they characterize it, rheumatic valvitis. And
well, in his characterization, he calls it my heart condition.
Yeah.
So he characterizes it more broadly. In the appeal, his typed-in section there. I assume that that was done either by him or on his behalf, right? On page A69?
I would assume that you're correct, sir, that he signed it and nobody else has signed it. So.
Okay.
However, the board in 1991 refers the matter of endocarditis back to the regional office for their initial consideration. That is a determination or a concession by the VA that they never considered the claim for endocarditis. They have, why, I don't know, but they had never considered it, and that is a favorable determination by the board, which they are bound to, and they can't overrule that, and which they did in by subsequent decisions. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And anything else you need to tell us?
No.
Do we have any more questions for Mr. Potter? More questions?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Potter.
Thank you for your attention and consideration.
Thank you.